And welcome to our Carborough Board of Aldermen regular business meeting, Tuesday, March 20th. The first item on our agenda is requests from visitors and speak. I need a glass of water. Excuse me.
The pollen's out there.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Sorry about that. request from visitors and speakers from the floor. So we have a couple of people signed up here. Are these Rogers Road sewer? Is that?
It's not on the agenda.
That's not something that's from our printed agenda.
No.
So that's okay. So why don't we go ahead and hear from Bishop Isla Irvin, if you would come up.
Good evening. My name is Bishop Isla McMillan Irvin. I am the senior pastor at the Faith Tabernacle Oasis of Love Church. And tonight, I want to come to you in love with a great big concern, a concern that I have had for many, many years, almost 30 years. And I just want to bring some things. If you open your blue information package that I have, you probably already read it, but I just want to bring it to you again. And in it, concern based on the Rogers Road sewage concept plan dated January the 2011 that was recommended by Owassa. Is Owassa here tonight?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Now, in that package, here's the January 2011 map. And number one, will the proposed sewage plan be followed? And number two, is it feasible to have Carborough, North Carolina, involved in this proposed sewage planning now? A sewage connection should be available to all properties on both sides of the street, regardless of the town's jurisdiction. Yes. Has Owassa reviewed the unit count for this project to be the proposed required sewage size line for their proposed connection? And the last one, which we put a picture down here to let you know, when you're coming out of Homestead, off Homestead onto Rogers Road, the turn that you're going to turn here to the turning right here is going to be the part where I'm concerned about sewage, because our church is straight across the street from this turn right here on Pure 4 Drive. And then we're looking at a sewage coming straight down Rogers Road. The reason and my concern is building on to our own plan in the future. And they have a project going on the Rogers Road. Well, down through Pure 4, there's a big project that's coming about, and I just don't want to get in all of that, but they will have sewage coming up through Pure 4 Drive. But my concern tonight is sewage that we've asked for so many years. We got our water, but we don't have the sewage. Well, some of us have water, but we don't have the sewage nowhere coming down Rogers Road. And the concern is so great, and I don't know what's going on until recently. A very good man came by with information that is here and which is wonderful concerning the public work, the town of Carrboro's public work department, the information concerning a sidewalk. And that's a good gift given to us on Rogers Road. But what about the sewage? With the project that's fixing to start on Pier 4 Drive is so great until if we start with all of that sewage coming up and down for their side of the road, which is Chapel Hill, and I'm afraid they're going to beautify that place so great and it's gonna we're going to miss the sewage out there. So that's my concern, if you would just look at it very carefully. And I've got all the information in here. We've done our homework. So if you just want to look at it and just help us with it, that is my concern.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is Bishop McMillan, is the are the lines in orange, the potential sewer route that's come out Purefoy Road, which I assume would be constructed as part of the church that's going to be on the corner there or that's going to be back there. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the church is not going to be, but so far from, well, you'll see it on the map. My husband will show it to you on the map where it's going to stop and go, okay?
The green will be the sewage. If you look at the center where Pier 4 Drive, Edward, intersection.
Right.
That's exactly where the line is right now.
That's where the, okay.
That's where the washer has set the line at the present time.
Well, because, I mean, maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but it seems to me if the sewer does come down that far for what's on the other side of the road, then properties on our side of Rogers Road would be eligible to apply for the subsidy that we have and hook up on an individual basis to that main. Am I wrong in saying that? Or
it should be.
If you're not listening to the first part of the question, right, the intersection, the line is not there. Because Roger Road is on the right-hand side, that's Chapel Hill. On the left-hand side belongs to Carrboro.
Mm-hmm.
So Chapel Hill says it's not our problem. They are not going to bring the sewage from that side, even from Edgar Drive at the present time. You just had approximate 50-some homes for the Habitats put in that section.
Mm-hmm.
That's already set up for the water, sewage and water.
Mm-hmm.
But on the Carver side, for whatever reason,
it's not there.
It hasn't happened. You know, even to now. That's why she asked the first question. Is Washa, they have set the plan. This has been doing since 2005, 1997. When you read your whole package, you'll comprehend everything that's which she's trying to explain to you. But because it's Chapel Hill versus Carrboro, and then Orange County has overall, and it's sort of fell through the hole a little bit.
Right. Well, I understand it. I mean, I live on Rogers Road, and I don't have sewer, so or water, so I understand.
So you live out there, too?
I live on Tally Hill Trail. But I'm trying to see is exactly where the new construction is going to be on the Chapel Hill side.
Right here.
Right in the corner. Right?
You see this right at that corner wall and trees. We're going to lose our trees.
Right.
And on the map, is it the yellow highlight?
That's me.
That's where the tabernacle is.
Right there.
But Chapel Hill on the other side is where they're building this new, I mean, the zoning signs are up there and everything, right? I mean,
yeah, everything is set to
go. So there's
going to be, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is,
go to your back page in your book.
There's going to be sewer to that lot.
Well, I know what you're saying. They're going to be sewage in that lot.
Back page. That answer all your questions. Go to your back page. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry, hold on.
Okay. Yeah, and what?
Oh, the back page.
Okay. Okay.
This will help you explain.
Right, okay.
Everybody got it?
Yes.
All right.
The one with St. Paul's at the top.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you look at that, this is the St. Paul's Church. This is the intersection of Roger Road,
mm-hmm.
and this is what we're talking about. Bring the sewage from right here to right. It's less than 200 yards.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Thank you. Okay. So to come to the intersection, make the left turn, go up Roger Road. You can tie everybody in on the Roger Road. I'll bring you down to Roger Road to tie them in.
Um, Did y'all have any?
Anything else?
No.
I just grabbed
y'all was, well, y'all were good. Thank you. And this is our concern, and we just want you to understand where we're at. So you're going to leave it up? Okay.
You have been such a strong and tireless advocate for your community for all these years, mm-hmm. and I want you to know that you're not going unheard, and okay. that people know that you're there, mm-hmm. particularly you. I remember spending a long hot summer in your church working at this stuff back when my hair was this color all by itself.
Well, you look the same.
Well, thank you. That's because her eyes are getting bad. Thank
and
you,
I think
Reverend.
I do, too.
And you do, too, Reverend. Yeah, you do. Okay. So, but anyway, I know it's long, but we hear you, and we really appreciate your constant efforts on behalf of your community.
And I just want to say before I close my little part that the sidewalks are going to be beautiful. That's an additional, like, beautifying the community, and it will bring the value up in our community. But before we start on that, we need to get rid. I don't want the sidewalks ever to be messed up when
right.
we put them in, too. We need to go ahead and take care of that sewage.
Right, so you wouldn't want to have to tear them up to put
oh,
sewage.
Oh, no.
Right.
No,
yes,
not
ma'am.
Sidewalks. We'd be walking and mess up our feet and legs and everything. That's all I
have. I also want to thank you for coming here and speaking to us, and want to let you know that, Sam, you got an email today, too, from the, you know about the joint municipality meeting with the county commissioners and us and Chapel Hill. Well, it hasn't been scheduled yet for the task force to look at the sewer issues, so when that is scheduled, my understanding is that it's going to be public, and we can certainly follow up with you to let you know so you can be present for that process.
Is that meeting not supposed to be on the 22nd?
We just got a we it wasn't scheduled is my understanding. We were just saying when we were available.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you
for being
here. And I guess one question, just because I've never been on these joint boards, but if we had requests such as a topographic map, is that something that the county would provide us, or is it our staff, or
maybe anybody?
The county does that. Right?
Yeah, whoever is staffing the particular information. Okay.
But I would email them ahead of time.
Okay, cool.
And you guys will keep us up to date on all of that, the sewer staffing.
Good job.
Yeah, can I just make a comment? And that is, I mean, with this, you know, with the church being built on the Chapel Hill side, it could be bringing, you know, sewer as close as it's ever been, really, mm-hmm. to the Carborough side. Mm-hmm. So to the extent we can track that, and be able to respond to landowners that live right across the street as to what part of the connection would be covered by mm-hmm. what we already know we would allocate, I think that'd be helpful. So.
Is that something that even hypothetically our staff could look at ahead of that meeting so that Sammy and Michelle would know going into the meeting what the potential is?
I think it depends on exactly how close to Rogers Road the sewer is going to be brought with what's being rezoned out there. So, I mean, I don't know if they could or not. I guess they could coordinate or ask Chapel Hill.
I mean,
or
is
see
this
the
something
site plan
that George could check with Chapel Hill?
I mean, maybe this is an official, I don't know who drew these lines, but maybe this was done.
Owassa did.
Yes, oh, okay.
So my understanding from our joint meeting in January is that you know, part of the committee's responsibility is to review the sewer plan. So I think we can expect that that will happen pretty early on in the process.
Well, I didn't realize this was an Owassa map. So this is
yes, that's official. That's the last one of his printing. Yes,
it sounded like you were asking them for coordination between both Chapel Hill and Carborough, which mm-hmm. is different than I mean, many committees have met about this issue for many years, and so as much information and prep work as we can do beforehand would be helpful for us to actually do something about this and move things forward, because in my,
And that'll be our way of moving things forward.
So it'd be great to have, you were shaking your head, I don't know if staff can look into coordinating with Chapel Hill.
That'd be great. Do we need a motion to ask staff to?
Second.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could you agree with the end of the motion?
I seconded Randy's motion.
My motion was to ask staff to...
Ask staff to touch base with Chapel Hill.
Chapel Hill on the...
On the plans for that sewer in regard to servicing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? I'll pass you unanimously. Thanks. It's a great detailed presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, but I got mine now. That's her.
Oh, okay.
I just got to hit where I'm at. I just got to hit where I'm at.
Bruce Irvin, are you here?
All right. First of all, good afternoon, and thank you for taking the time to listen to us. I happen to be married to the Bishop, Isla Irvin, there. I'm the new man on the block for the last 3.5 years, and, you know, things do change. After the season of her late husband, you know, we stepped in the plate, and I'm not a bishop by no means. And I'm not a minister by no means. I'm just one of those God-given children that knows how to speak and how to say thank you for a good job well done. And one of the things that I have during the research, as you probably see that little suitcase back there, I spent the last 2.5 months doing some digging up different things. And the more I dig, the more I find. And there's a lot of things that a lot of people don't like what I've already dug up because I've dug up some old wounds. And I'm not digging for the old wounds. We're about moving forwards. What's happened to today, this is a new day. We want to move forward. We cannot go back what happened in 1972. We cannot make motion what happened in 2005. But we do know that in 2006, when Roger Rose was divided up and made a town, right-hand side goes to Carver, left-hand goes to Chapel Hill. And there's been some confusion, whose power, whose job. It's not my desire to say who's got the power. All I'm asking is a little help. And Carver, you can step up the plate and help us. We don't want to knock a home run. We just want to run down the baseline a little bit. And first of all, I'd like to say again, thank you for that time. I've been looking for my neighbor. And, you know, he ran off and left me. And then all of a sudden, last week, I walked in over here to the office, and here he stands, Brother Arthur. Archie over there. That's my neighbor. He's been there for 3.5 years, and all of a sudden, he just walked off and left. But then, if you pull your book, your folder out, and you understand this is what I'm about. And we call the buzzards. And I know the chief of police has been out. All right, Brother Robert has been out. The animal enforcement, if you look on the right-hand side. And you see these pretty little buzzards here? Yep. We have approximately 300 of them that sits on top of the house and the cars every day, you know. And if you, this little, the one you see at the left at the top, if you look at that one, that's in Brother Archer's backyard. That's why he took off and left me. And I'm still sleeping with those buzzards in here. Look, that's him right there. Is that not true, Brother Archie? Is this not your house? Is this where you stayed at for X number of years? Used to. You always said used to. He left us. But that's all righty. And the second one is, as you see, this tower line is right in my yard, 25 feet from the house. We also, as you're looking down the road, this is Roger Road. This is where all those trees over there is getting ready to be cut off. There's going to be a total of 20 acres of trees cut off, and then we're going to save 6 trees. So if you look down there, which I'm not going to go into all details, but there is enough for your pictures that we have walked that 20 acres over, and all those buzzards are sitting over there. They come right up out of there, come right over and sit on our porches. As you see, there's our Mercedes sets there in the yard. We gets up every day. We have to wash him down, clean him up. And the biggest thing is, as you look at that church, you know, the kids come to church on Sunday morning, and, you know, kids are going to do their thing. They're going to waddle around on the floors. I don't like it. I wish some of your parents would do a little bit more upkeep with them, but they don't. And waddling around in that floor and all that feces coming right off the top of the church, you know, these kids being exposed. Now, you tell me there's no damage there? I don't know. I'm not going to go into it, but I think it's all we ask you to do is help us look into it. Representative Ms. Insko has been out. She stepped out on 224. She's taking a look at it. She said, I'm going to try to do what I can. The animal control, Brother Robert, shows up on 224. He says, I'm going to try to do what I can. Chief Hutchinson, as you know, these birds are protected. So, therefore, since they're protected, but there are some things you can people can do. Now, but we just need a little help to help implement what we need to do. That's all we asked for. All right. Thank you for Dave. He has given us a good encouragement, you know, to come forward. Thank you for the opportunity. 3 minutes left. You need to shut up and sit down.
Thank you.
Be blessed.
Sir, you did say that you weren't a preacher, but I believe you missed your calling. Yes.
You know when I missed my calling?
When?
On Sunday morning when you didn't pass the plate to me. But God bless you, though.
All right.
Thank you.
Another excellent presentation. All right. And
Mark, I haven't seen anything from maybe from Chief Hutchison or anybody else in Carrboro who's been out there, because I know the birds are protected, but I'd love to find out what can be done and what's been at least suggested, or what are they looking into. So is there some way we could just get like a white paper from Chief Hutchison?
The mayor and Alderman. We'll be able to do that for you. I know that the chief did give me a heads up about this. They've had the animal control officer out there, and they have tried to do some things. We can certainly get you a status report and let you know what's been done and what other ideas that we might have. But we have tried to address it, and Mr. Urban was kind enough to bring that to my attention again. So we'll take another look.
Thank you. Okay. So we'll look forward to that. Okay, so I think that brings us to resolution relating to UNC advertising on WRDU.
Yeah, there's a resolution at your seats, and it basically, we mentioned it last week, it basically asks the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, the Board of Trustees, and Chancellor Thorpe to sever their ties with WRDU. Or Rush Radio, until and unless WRDU Rush Radio severs ties with Rush Limbaugh. And this came out of comments that he made that were really problematic. And so that's what we're asking for. And I think Dan had an I'm making the motion that we pass the resolution.
And I'm going to second it. Dan, did you have an addition?
Yeah, it's in there.
Yeah, it's in here.
Sorry. Oh, okay.
All right.
So it's been moved and seconded.
It's been moved and seconded. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
I want to thank Jackie and Michelle and Dan for working on this. This is excellent.
The resolution implies to Kathy that you will forward it to the properties named at the end. Okay.
Okay. I apologize. Apparently I missed... two people who were not on the agenda, Elizabeth Reeves and David Malikin.
And we also have one charge tonight.
Okay.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Elizabeth Reeves, and I participated in the community gardening event held last Saturday, March 17th. I would like to thank those of you who supported and attended the event. I appreciated your presence and found the sunny morning garden spent digging, planting, and interacting with other community members and pedestrians to be an exciting and fun experience. I hope the future will present more opportunities to engage in activities that bolster our community togetherness and commitment to a sustainable lifestyle. However, I'm speaking to you tonight to express my concern with what I feel was the only negative aspect of that lovely Saturday, the oppressive police presence, police surveillance, and the targeted arrest of a participant. As soon as I arrived that Saturday morning, other participants and I were heavily photographed by members of the Carrboro Police Department. We noticed 6 marked CPD vehicles, 2 marked Chapel Hill Police Department vehicles, and 4 unmarked CPD vehicles in adjacent and nearby parking lots with windows tinted so darkly that their occupants were not visible. Approximately 4 police vehicles, including CPD's K-9 unit, continually circled and patrolled the area. This was in addition to approximately 10 uniformed CPD officers and more plainclothes officers present during the event. The officers on foot continually harassed peaceful gardeners about their presence on the public sidewalk. Many continued to take photographs of the activists present, and one officer menacingly filmed the entire event on a video camera. I say that this was menacing because law enforcement in the United States has a dark history of using footage to single out and target activists for arrest and to undermine social movements. We have no idea why this footage is being shot, with whom it is being shared, and for what purpose. Does Carrboro really want to be the town known that surveilled its activists for the purposes of ending political and social movements advocating for change? Police interference with the event culminated when officers arrested a participant who was using non-permanent chalk to decorate the street. Officers asked our friend to use the designated crosswalk, but despite his compliance with their request and the absence of any pedestrian or traffic accident, he was arrested for impeding vehicular traffic. I think it is important to point out that as a Mexican-American male, this individual was one of the only people of color present at the event. And it is possible that his arrest was racially motivated. Whether or not racial profiling is to blame, there is absolutely no doubt this arrest was targeted at an activist solely because he is an activist. In fact, one of the aldermen present remarked at the event that he was surprised at the arrest, as the police department had not previously enforced jaywalking ordinances with arrest. Additionally, the Carver Chief of Police is quoted in the Daily Tar Heel newspaper as saying, quote, "The arrest sends a very strong message to the rest of the participants that unlawful behavior will be dealt with legally and strongly." I feel this quote definitively shows that CPD sought to make an arrest early during the event to demoralize the activist present and to make an example of one individual as a tactic of intimidation. And the inclination of the Carver Chief of Police to make an example of an activist is even more disconcerting in light of the constant photographing and filming in which CPD engaged that day. This tactic of intimidation is, of course, in addition to the intimidation already inherent to the CPD's heavy-handed presence at the event. Furthermore, it comes after two other activists and I were harassed by CPD officers on Sunday, February 26th, while lawfully drawing with chalk on the public sidewalk adjacent to the 201 North Greensboro Street lot. The three of us were approached by four armed officers, one wearing a tactical uniform, who were backed up by three squad cars driven by three additional officers. The officers demanded to see our identification, even though our actions gave them no legal grounds to do so. When one of the three activists being hassled refused to provide his ID or speak to the officers, they attempted to skirt, telling him he was not legally required to provide it. Then they made what I feel were threatening comments about him. To the other officer, quote, "I think he's the one we got the email about." In response, quote, "Yeah, I recognize him too." Then to myself and the other activist, quote, "That's some real good company you guys keep." It was abundantly clear that these officers wanted to intimidate us based on their decision to call squad car backup, to tell us they needed our identification as part of, quote, "an ongoing investigation," and to outnumber us 2-1. This heavy-handedness was an alarming precursor to the oppressive police presence at the community gardening event. Finally, during our publicly announced post-event meeting last night at 6 p.m., our group was followed by two police vehicles as we walked from the public greenway to the town commons. Police vehicles also continually circled the block during our meeting at the commons. It is my hope that the Carborough Town Aldermen can use their working relationship with the Carborough Police Department, as well as their power to create town ordinances, to ensure that activists carrying out protests and actions will not be harassed, intimidated, or surveilled by police. Furthermore, I hope that on a smaller scale, protocols to prevent the targeted citation and arrest of activists can be put into place. And on a larger scale, I hope that CPD is not being used by other agencies to surveil and target individuals who participate in activism. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate your attention, the attention I know you will devote to this important matter. Your commitment to protecting the rights of political dissidents and activists is tantamount to the fostering the culture of civic liberty and freedom that I value so highly in the town of Carborough.
Thanks.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Mark.
Go ahead.
What kind of conversations have you had with the police that aren't of the moment? And I'm just wondering, like, I understand your perspective. I can completely see your perspective. I know that the police have another perspective, which I also understand. And I'm wondering if some conversations maybe between a few people from your group and the police chief, who actually is a very fine human being, I wonder if some conversations might be useful. What do you think?
I could agree that that would be useful. Personally, I would be hesitant to take that on after my previous very negative and traumatizing experience with police officers at the Yates Building raid in Chapel Hill. I'm very, very uncomfortable talking to police, okay, which is part of why I had such a problem with their presence at this event.
And I understand that. I think our police reaction to things has been markedly different than Yates, than what happened at Yates. And she is one of the She's a very fine human being. I just wonder if a conversation so that people understand each other and people understand each other's boundaries and people understand why things happen from both sides might be useful. Mr. Mayor?
Well, I agree with that suggestion, but I think, you know, I guess I feel the need to kind of challenge one of the assumptions behind the argument that you're making. I mean, so you've been a part of these various activities, and they were variously self-billed as being occupations of buildings or whatever, and this proposed community garden. And those are all three of those things, incidents were illegal. I mean, so we don't spend any time investigating people involved in organizations that are doing the things that are legal, you know? And I mean, to sit back and say, well, I'm part of these various things that are against the law, and I feel that it's not fair that I'm being investigated for that is sort of a, unrealistic expectation.
Well, I think that particularly the community gardening event, and I was not part of the building occupation, I wasn't present, but I think particularly the community gardening event walks the fine line between an illegal activity and civil disobedience, which is something that I hope that people in Carrboro can respect and value.
But civil I think everybody on this board at one time or another, if not has engaged in civil disobedience, has supported it or seen it as a legitimate tactic, and we do. But civil disobedience means you are breaking the law.
You know, can I?
And facing the consequences.
And facing the consequences of breaking the law.
Go ahead.
So, well, I agree, and that's the nature of civil disobedience. Like you know what the laws are, and you take an action fully knowing what the consequences might be. On the other hand, I feel that though there are consequences, there's also a degree to which those consequences can be applied, and I think that's more of what the question is here in regard to the, from my point of view, excessive use of police presence, given the fact that there really hasn't been any kind of violence to warrant that kind of police presence, and even the kinds of surveillance that has been used, you know, I don't want to have a double standard either, because on the one hand, I don't want to say that the police should assume that anarchists here are the same as anarchists and elsewhere, and that would justify the need to surveil them. By the same token, police elsewhere have been violent in using tactics. And I don't think it's necessarily true to say that our local police should be assumed to be just like police elsewhere, everywhere. So, but I can understand how protesters could feel, given the amount of police force present and the type of surveillance that has been used. And given that, I hope that, I mean, we're going to have a conversation about these things anyway, because of our collaboration with the police in Chapel Hill, and so I hope we can address the policy discussion of how to do that in the future. So,
I do think the question before us tonight is not whether or not enforcement of laws against lawbreakers is, you know, in any way under question. I think the question before us, which should be considered as a matter of policy, which, as Sammy suggests, we're not going to delve into tonight, is whether it's appropriate in keeping with our values for there to be harassment, surveillance, intimidation of law-abiding activists, political activists. I'm very troubled by some of what I've seen. For example, when the police were videotaping on Saturday, I don't know what our police department's relationship is with the SBI or the FBI or agencies that might not share our values in terms of political expression and that might, in fact, have another agenda in terms of how they're clamping down on protest, as we've seen in other places, and that concerns me. And, you know, things like a squad car, two squad cars following people walking down the street, or the experience that Elizabeth and, what, a couple others had while chalking on the sidewalk, those were all very troubling to me. But I think what I would like us to do is really ask the manager to get us the agenda item on these matters soon, and I think we need to try and discuss them as questions of policy, irrespective of what we think of, in this instance, the Carborough Commune or some of the events that have gone on, to be perhaps informed in our discussions by those, but that really, as a matter of policy, we need to be thinking much more broadly in terms of what's appropriate for Carborough and what kinds of, and regardless of who the protesters are, and thinking back historically to some of the things that have gone on that we deplore in terms of how civil disobedience has been treated by the authorities, and we are the authorities. I think we need to take a very careful and clear look as to whether, as a policy-making body that tries to have progressive values, if we can chart a different course that's more tolerant, which I think we are, but that also engages with people in a different manner, in a manner that's not threatening, and that, as Jackie suggests, starts more with communication, and communication that if one of us is caught jaywalking, that it's the same respect, or chalking on the sidewalk, if we were, it's the same respect we would receive, that any citizen would receive, and that people should not be, there should not be prejudices held in the minds of our police based on the organizational affiliations or what they presume to be the characters of people who have, in fact, not broken the law.
Michelle and then Lydia.
Thanks for being here. I wasn't at the event, and you indicated that the person was in the crosswalk and moved there after the police requested that.
That's only what I've heard from him, but I was across the street at the time, so I didn't actually see it.
So it would be great to clarify that, because what I heard you say is that after he was requested to move into the crosswalk, that he was then arrested, and I'm not clear because I haven't seen a report from the police what happened. The other thing is, I'm not a police officer, and so I'm not beginning to know where the line is between when to act and when not to, and I agree we need to have a conversation as a board about this, because I don't want to be in the business of micromanaging the police officers so then they aren't sure when to make a choice about something and when to make a choice. And I'm not trying to compare the event on Saturday to some violent event either. I don't think it was that from what I've heard and seen. And I do think that a conversation between Carborough Commune or whatever groups are engaged in this activism around what's going to happen with that property and other things in our community and private property, it would be great to have a conversation with the police officers and perhaps someone on the board and or someone from the mediation center, someone can help facilitate that conversation between the two. I also heard you say you're traumatized from what happened at Gates, so I would encourage that conversation to happen and us to have a conversation about this as well. Yeah, that's all I will
There is one other speaker, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, Michelle actually made several points I was going to make also. I do have a concern about what might be micromanagement of our police department, and I don't want our police department, who knows very well the values of this community and knows very well our policies and is very much in step with how we think. I don't want them to have to second-guess what they do in situations that will be much more serious than, not to say this isn't serious, but a situation that might be much more serious. And really, even to the extent that, you know, once before this group, was occupying a building illegally, and we spent several hours with our mayor and other folks there and the chief talking with the folks, and it ended rather as well as it could have. Even in light of that, and even in light of last Tuesday, knowing this was going to happen Saturday, having a long conversation here with the chief and talking about what could happen, what might happen. People brought up all these prospective things that could happen. I mean, really, honestly, I think our police department kind of goes above and beyond trying to avoid the kind of situations that would be ones that would make us uncomfortable.
Go ahead.
I want to thank you for coming. I think the conversation we're having right now is really important. I was there on Saturday, and I really like what Jackie, Dan, and Michelle has said about moving forward and potentially having some conversation. Civil disobedience is about pushing that boundary. And at some point, when you are disobedient and you know you're being disobedient and you intend to be disobedient, you also need to be willing to have the conversation afterwards, because that's what you want. You want to engage, but you want to be able to engage around the fact that you have you've made a stand for a reason, and that's when you get to explain what your reason is. I mean, having done it, I know. So I think with looking towards the future to be able to do that is important. I understand the trauma. It takes a long time to get beyond feeling vulnerable. Sometimes you never do. Being photographed, being videotaped is scary. But it happens to us all the time, and now more than back in the day when I was doing it. You know, it was the difference between a camera, and now people can hold up a phone. But what happened at Yates is not what happened Saturday. And so I really appreciate you coming and talking and sharing with us your level of discomfort from your perspective. And I really appreciate the conversation we're having now, because I do think, you know, we want to be able to look at policy and be sure that policy conveys, you know, our values. But we also want to be able to look at that quality of civil disobedience that, you know, where is that boundary for us in Carrboro? And at what point do we take the disobedience to the conversation to get what we want from the disobedience?
Yeah, I think the other challenge that strikes me is just that, you know, looking at it from the police's perspective, we don't have any idea what this event is really going to be. And, you know, it was a peaceful event, but as described, it seemed to have the intention to trespass onto the property, to climb over the fence or cut through the fence or whatever. And we have no idea how serious people are about that, and we have no idea how many people are planning to show up. And we've got to schedule people to be available to deal with a variety of situations. And obviously, as it really turned out, It was a pretty mild situation. You know, we had no way of knowing that on our end.
For what it's worth, I tabled advertising this event for weeks at the farmers market and made it abundantly clear to anyone who asked me questions that our only intention was to plant plants around the fence, which is what happened. And when people asked if there were intentions to trespass on the property, I made it very clear that we had no intentions to do so.
But the flyers were a little different.
And the Facebook chatter was not entirely consistent with that.
Well, and not everybody knew, and when the building got broken into, that people made agreements about what was going to happen, and not everybody knew that folks were going to break into the building. So the other thing I wanted to add is they're still patrolling the neighborhood. I live in the neighborhood, and a police officer has been driving through nightly, and someone broke into the house next door to our house. So the increased patrol may not have everything to do with this event. There have been multiple things that have happened related, and someone broke into the greenhouse as well. It was no one from this group at all that I know of. But there are other activities going on, and I think it's important to know that. The police are looking at our community as a whole and not just this isolated event.
All right. Maybe I'll call on David Malikin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. So it felt to me like that just got very kind of distracted from the main issue, the main issue that I saw with the police involvement on Saturday, which was that, you know, while there were numerous people jaywalking over by Weaver Street, clearly visible from where we were standing and gardening, they chose to single out somebody because he was involved in an action doing the exact same thing that plenty of people were doing in the exact, you know, one block radius that we were operating within, and arrested him for it. And personally, I think it was at most a ticketable offense, but I'm not a police officer. I'm also not going to ask you to disarm the police or sit us down with the police or do anything else with the police, because I don't think that this particular hierarchical sort of back and forth is the venue for that. I'm really disturbed by the fact that there was such a consistent presence of overwhelming force that was not only hostile to us the whole time, but was clearly so overwhelming that they didn't even know what to do. I mean, there's a wonderful picture of me chalking the sidewalk with eight officers standing menacingly over my shoulder, some of whom made comments, some of whom just kind of muttered and grumbled at me as I, you know, lawfully squatted there writing my messages. It was also interesting to see the arbitrariness of things shift throughout the day, from the fact that initially people were allowed in the street to chalk as far as long as they weren't blocking vehicular traffic, none of the officers said anything. However, after they chose to arrest Vince, for what I saw with that arrest was that he had walked across from the entrance to that municipal lot right there, the police lot, once, and had chalked on the ground a vine across. He was then asked to use the crosswalk in the future. He used the lit crosswalk, and from what I could see, he was maybe a couple feet outside of the crosswalk, potentially, but he was within the general range of the crosswalk, chalking. If he was outside of the crosswalk, it was only so that he could put a chalk line down on the black macadam instead of the white where it wasn't visible. But he was clearly within the general area of the crosswalk, after which point two police officers jaywalked across the street to confront him from the opposite side of the general area. So it's not like he blatantly, you know, disregarded what he was asked to do before being confronted with an overwhelming reaction. But I think that he was clearly complying with the spirit of their request. And I think that, I mean, throughout the entire day, we were bellowed at to get off the sidewalk, make sure we weren't blocking the sidewalk, when people were clearly allowing a passage. I mean, we had a wheelchair come through, and then maybe half a minute after that, we were bellowed at to make sure that people could move on the sidewalk. I mean, it was just the kind of thing where we were consistently presented with an attitude of, you have no right to be here, you need to move. having been harassed by the Carrboro police in the past for perfectly legal presence on the sidewalk, and having them spend about 2 to 3 minutes before they were willing to tell me that no, I didn't need to give them my ID, and no, I was not being detained, and watching them attempt the verbal gymnastics of getting around the fact that they didn't want to tell me that, yes, I was required to give them my ID, knowing that they weren't allowed to say that, but watching them continue to try to avoid telling me that I didn't have to, was very disturbing and very troubling, especially in light of everything that went on over the weekend.
Thanks, David. I do find that really problematic. I mean, we're not talking about micromanaging. If anyone of our community came to us and told us that there was a police who was harassing or asking for documents when they had no right to do that, that would be problematic to me. And I don't consider it micromanaging. I consider it we are the place where people come to make sure there's accountability for these kinds of things, and to ask the public just go back to the police and have a chat with them is missing the point of our function. And so I would I don't know what to do in this kind of situation other than, like, maybe we should be having, and this isn't to say that our police is bad or anything like that, it's to respond to a member of our community and us having a conversation with our police about this not being the best thing that we want representing Carrboro. So I would hope that we could sit down and have this conversation before we ask members of the public to go have a chat with the police.
May I respond to that? Encouraging citizens to go talk to Chief Hutchinson is not the same as saying that we're not going to talk to her. In fact, I would encourage each and every member of this board to have a conversation with Carolyn about what happened, and I think you will find her very forthcoming. Mm-hmm. I do know that she is a very open person who cares very deeply about this community. And if a citizen is having issues, I think she would be very amenable to talking with people about what happened. And I think she would find that enlightening, and the other parties may too. But I am not going to write police policy. I don't see that as my job. I do see it as my job, if there's something wrong in the police department, to step in and intervene. But we're a community built on community, and community means people talk to each other, regardless of that position. So go talk to Carolyn about this.
If I may, I feel selective enforcement is something that is quite clearly wrong, and I think that definitely would fall into the realm of the type of things you seem to be implying would fall under your jurisdiction, but it's not, you understand. Now, if you support selective enforcement, I would appreciate, as being a community member, to know that, but otherwise I think that would strike me as a red flag.
I think people should talk to each other about what happened. I don't know both sides of this story. I know that the road was drawn in, and that must have taken some time, and somebody must have been in the road to do that. I've heard your side of the story. I want to hear the other people's side of the story. And I think you could talk to each other. That's all I'm asking, is talk to each other. That's not a bad thing. You know, it's how to stop bad things.
But you're asking us to talk to people who are currently serving people with $400 tickets for putting up flyers in the same manner as other people, and to talk to people who are arresting our friends for doing the exact same thing that plenty of people are doing at the same time. I mean, you're asking us to sit down and engage with people who are actively accruing various fees and all sorts of
that's
legal
exactly
issues.
That's exactly what I'm
against.
Asking.
Right, and what I'm saying is that's a lot of talk from us. That's speaking to power when power is actively acting against us. And I don't understand how we can be expected to just sit and talk when we see that the talking does nothing, when we see that the talking, in the case of all of the Yates aftermath, had a zero effect.
We're not Chapel Hill. Have you talked?
There were Carborough police that were present at the Yates incident.
Have you talked to the police chief?
I did. I spoke with her briefly on the weekend. All she had the interest in telling me was that the officers were justified in what they were doing and that she had no intention of altering or changing their decision.
I think conversations need to happen, and I think
is there something you are requesting specifically from us?
I think that I would like to see the dialogue that Sammy just suggested. I would like to know if you could inquire if there is selective enforcement, why, if they're engaging with the FBI, and why, because I've been hearing that from numerous sources, just what's going on and why certain groups of individuals are receiving specialized treatment, especially when the group, the so-called Carborough Commune, doesn't have an actual membership list.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, it's just difficult to get for me to get away from that. What we're talking about is the police spending time investigating people who are involved in activities that are avowedly illegal.
Chalking the sidewalk is not illegal.
The event as billed on the internet
was
didn't see the Facebook page about it.
I created flyers for that event. None of the flyers said anything about doing anything illegal. Everything that I was involved in, whether it was at the farmer's market talking with people, whether it was leafleting in other places from coffee shops to on the street, everything that we said as people who had actively worked on it was that we were going to work with the fence, that we had no desire to trespass onto the property, and that we had no desire to do any damage or destruction to the fence.
Right now, tonight, is the first time I've heard any of y'all say that.
We have never spoken. I don't know when.
You did all this firing. I'm sorry, I missed it. I mean, I'm serious. I've been paying a lot of attention to this event, and I haven't been hearing that rhetoric.
So what I would ask is, where on the flyers did you see us encouraging or stating anything to do anything illegal? Can you cite anything that was put out by the Carborough Commune?
You need to search my Facebook right now? Is that what you're asking me to do? I can do that.
I'm asking for the actual things that were put out by the Commune that either...
There is no official commune, right?
Right, I mean, there were official communicators.
I mean, who's in charge of the commune?
No one.
Right, okay.
Right, so I'm asking, okay.
So how am I to know what is an official communication from the commune?
I saw that there
commune.
Was a Chapel Hill parent who made a request that it would be cool if someone were to, I think it was something like, scale the fence and hang lights from that tall tree to the roof of the CVS. From what I understand, I'm not friends with her on Facebook. This is merely hearsay. But I would say if you were taking things like that seriously, that strikes me as a little odd, just because the whole premise of how are you going to get power for those lights, it's being suggested by somebody who ostensibly had no intention of doing that and was clearly suggesting that as some sort of joke around the event or some sort of, you know, colorful statement. I think that in the realm of things that were presented realistically, there was clearly no direct or immediate intention presented to do anything illegal.
So it was just silly that the town of Carborough had a discussion at our meeting last week about how we would deal with any potential illegal activities?
I don't know anything about that. I only know that there were, aside from the one arrest for jaywalking.
We discussed it because none of us had heard any of that kind of talk.
Okay.
You know, we discussed at our meeting in open session how we were going to deal with the potential for people to be trespassing, to be breaking, entering, that type of thing. Because what had been presented was that folks were going to go on CVS's property and plant plants.
Presented by who? And what had it, how, when, where was that presented that people were actively going to go on to the property and present and plant plants? It was presented that plants would be planted. Plants had been planted. As far as I know, nobody saw that as the type of thing worthy of arresting or otherwise.
You don't think there was anything at all ambiguous?
Oh, I never said that. Okay. I asked for an explicit statement that there were plans to violate, you know.
What I heard was that there would be seed bombing, and that's why I specifically asked Chief Hutchison last week, you know, if people toss seeds over the fence, is that going to be a problem? Because that's what I heard would be the activity. And that, in fact, was the only incursion onto the property.
You know, this is a really interesting conversation. I'm not sure it has a conclusion.
Not right now, for sure.
So, I mean, I think we definitely will have a conversation on our policy, and hopefully in that conversation we can address some of these issues. And you know, issues, I'll talk to the chief. I mean, I've talked to her. She's very friendly. But I've had the benefit of being in this position and having had a relationship with her beforehand, so I can perfectly understand others who may have a general sense of who police and how they work is. So as a representative of some of my community members, I'll certainly have that conversation with the police chief.
Thank you. Would you have coffee with me and Carolyn?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, David.
I put it on the town account.
I don't really feel comfortable with that.
Then I'll treat, okay? Okay. I'll treat.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. All right. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for
Mark,
your work.
I have one more comment before we move on. That this is kind of sort of a broader question of, I guess, semantic usage in our discussions, which is, I think, we should take care about how we use the term micromanage, because we often say we don't want to micromanage when someone's suggesting something that we don't want to think about. But in fact, we are all quite happy to micromanage when it are things that we do want to think about. And I'll give just one case in point, that when the Baldwin Park Garden came here to us last month, no one said to us, oh, you should go just talk to the Parks and Recreation Director. She's a great person, which she is. No one said, well, we shouldn't micromanage that. In fact, we micromanaged big time. Every one of us went to that site, looked into the details. We didn't expect the staff to do it, and it was because it was something we recognized that even in its details was a matter of policy that this board should reflect on, and I think it's not micromanaging for us to ever consider that. We might disagree about what issues rise to that, but the question is always, what are the matters of policy that we want to consider? And I don't think we should try to use rhetorical terminology to try and diminish each other's concerns.
I use that term, and so I'm going to clarify. I don't want the police to have to think about when to act and when not to act, because they're worried that we're going to speak in a meeting about their actions later. So to be clear, that was what I meant about saying micromanaging. And maybe perhaps we have a different definition of what that means,
right, but,
and we need to get clear about that.
Well, let me ask you, though. I mean, if this board sets policy, then there's no need to think. It's clear. The policy is set. So if we're talking about policies to be set by this board, I think under your terms, that would not be micromanaging. And that, in fact, is what our job is to set policy. And that's what I'm
talking about. I wasn't
trying
to diminish your concerns or other people's statements. I just wanted to clarify why I was using that terminology to respond to what you were saying.
Okay.
Right, and I'll just briefly respond to that, too, because I use the term also. I try to not micromanage on this board. I mean, we have an entirely capable full-time staff that does a great job. And with the Baldwin Park example, that was kind of an example where it really helped to go physically see exactly what was being proposed and look at the land and ground and everything. I mean, I've had many jobs where I've supervised or been ahead of 15, 20, 30 people. And, you know, I just, in my view, it does, there's a fine line to walk between making people think that people above you are looking at every little thing you do, and it affects how you work in your job, and that's the point I was making.
Kathy, would you please send me an email and remind me to set up a meeting with coffee with David and Carolyn and I?
Okay.
And if we could hold on to David's sign-in so we can reach him, I'd appreciate that.
I noticed actually he left his address off, but anyway.
We'll find him. Thanks.
Don't say that.
No,
yeah,
no.
Please.
No, I mean,
we'll get word to him.
Okay, if you could give it to the clerk. Thanks, David.
All right. All right. That brings us to the consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
There are 9 items on your consent agenda this evening. The first one is the approval of the minutes from the March 6th and March 13th board meetings. Item number 2 is the request to set a public hearing on land use ordinance amendments, which would establish bicycle parking requirements and revise compact car parking requirements. Item number 3 is the resolution considering the Wise Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan applicants for the property located at 302 West Weaver. Item number 4 would authorize the town manager to enter into a sales tax reallocation audit contract. Item 5 is a resolution for the issuance of $2,590,000 worth of sidewalk bond anticipation notes. Item 6 is an ordinance revising the membership of the Arts Committee and the Greenways Commission. 7 would make appointments to the Art Committee. 8 would be a resolution amending the town's fee waiver policy. And finally, consent agenda. Item number 9 is a resolution setting public hearings related to grant funding eligibility for the Roberson Street Sewer Project.
And I take it this means it's now 7:50 or something.
And,
in official car road time.
Move the item.
Wait, Michelle needs to.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I've got brief questions for 3 and 9.
All right. We also need to pull off 6. So could we have a motion for everything but 3, 6, and 9?
Well, I have a question about 4.
I withdraw my motion.
After it gets moved.
What are we doing?
Ask your question about 2.
My question about 2 is just about compact car versus subcompact. And I just, somebody can give me like 2 seconds so that in my brain I'm really distinguishing between compact and subcompact.
Is that a smart car?
Is like a smart car a subcompact and a compact a Honda Civic? Or give me something practical.
The current land use ordinance provides a definition of subcompact car as being, I believe it is 175 inches in length or less.
I know, I couldn't envision that. Give me, what does that mean now?
This is your...
I can't think of how many feet it is off the top of my head. But,
let's see, it's about 15 feet.
My car is a 2-seater. Is it a subcompact or a compact?
When we looked into it, we found that...
isn't yours a roadster?
That there's... The EPA classifies mini compact, subcompact, compact, mid-size, and on up. And a lot of cars do not fall under that subcompact category. So you're talking about like a Ford Mustang and like I think like a an Aston Martin, and like sports cars might fall under subcompact. But compact cars, you know, are like the Honda Civics and things like that.
So Dan's new... spiffy Fiat, adorable car.
Totally.
Is that subcompact or compact?
That would be a mini compact.
Bring it in. We'll pull the tape.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I don't know specifically about that.
It's almost. It's like a fit. It's smaller than a fit.
If you give the mayor a ride, he'll give you a ruling.
That could be a. I mean, it could be a subcompact. Could be a mini compact. I don't know every
okay.
model. What it is.
I'm getting closer.
And I just want, when we revisit this in the public hearing, that we could have a comparison between what the EPA's cubic footage is relative to what that means on that table of, like, other localities and, like, width and lengths. Like,
yeah.
What are the cubic foot width and length equivalents? Like, it would be useful for us to understand that.
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to item 3. Who had an issue about that?
I need to
recuse myself.
Well, we'll come to 6 in one time.
Three
is the one you're on.
3, okay. Energy Wise.
Okay.
I'm moving to recuse myself.
Okay. I move that we recuse Michelle.
Second.
All right. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
For number move item 3.
Wait, I just have a question. I just wanted to ask a question about it. I was just wanting to know what the return on investment is, and not necessarily reporting now, but in the future when we get these kinds of requests, I would like to just have that information. Yeah, length of time when it gets paid off with the loan. Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Move item three.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Come on back.
Pass unanimously. All right. So now we're on number six.
I have a fast one for six.
Okay, go ahead.
This is for both the Arts Commission and the Greenways Commission.
Which we have new things that are, for the public, because we have new revised ones that are put
on
our table.
The Arts Commission had asked, and I don't see this either. The Arts Commission had asked, and we've had some staff changeover and stuff for a while, so I don't think that that got there. But the Art Commission would like to have a seat on the Carrboro Arts Commission for a full seat, a full voting seat for a liaison from the Chapel Hill Arts Commission. Our chair has a full voting seat on the Chapel Hill Arts Commission, and apparently it took months for that to happen. There's a lot of there is a lot of cooperation between different arts organizations and between the arts community in general with the two towns, and the Carrboro Arts Commission thought it would be very useful to have a permanent member from the Chapel Hill, particularly since they have extended us that courtesy. So I would like to move that in addition to adding the seat for the Arts Center, that the Carrboro Arts Commission add an additional seat for a liaison from the Chapel Hill Arts Commission to be chosen by the Chapel Hill Arts Commission, and that that liaison will have voting powers, because ours does there. Be a full member.
And that would be specified as an 11th seat.
Yes.
I'll second.
Thanks.
A question. The Chapel Hill liaison will be selected from the Chapel Hill committee.
Will
it then need to be approved by the board?
Didn't sound like
no,
it.
No.
Thank you.
But thanks for being aware of those details. Thanks. Thanks, Dan.
Okay, moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Mr. Attorney, you look
months
concerned.
In Chapel Hill.
Not concerned, but we don't have any language to, I mean, we'd have to bring it back to you to adopt something.
Sure.
Okay. Sounds like they're okay with that, Mike.
Fine. We just.
Okay.
Do we need to?
Didn't Jackie just say what the language is?
Well, she said what the substance of it is.
Okay, but we need to actually look at it.
Yeah,
you need to adopt something that's in writing, even if we can scratch it out before the meeting. Fine, if we can't, we just bring it back in.
Okay,
that's cool.
Why don't you see what you can do?
Yeah, and if it's next week, it's next week. That's
either way.
We need to adopt the Greenway separately, and it's in front of us.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. I think we had number nine. Is that right?
Number nine. I just wanted to make sure. I find it really valuable. Well, thank you to staff for pursuing this grant. I think that's really valuable. But I do want to make sure that we are in communication with the county, because we did get this quarter cent sales tax, and I feel that's still an opportunity. If this grant were not to happen, we at least have that as a backup. So we need to maintain that conversation with them. Let them know that we're interested. Thank you.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Aye. Pass unanimously.
So it's now
move,
seven.
Move the remaining items whose numbers I couldn't possibly figure out.
Oh, didn't we already do?
I think it's what is it?
One.
Four, five.
That's one.
One,
four,
five.
Two, four, five, seven.
I thought we did
that. We did two.
Seven will have to wait, since there isn't actually a seat that's been created the ordinance before it.
Right. No. That's a different.
So it's one,
seat.
Four, five, and eight.
This is
has
the
been
one
moved.
For.
Is there a second?
Second.
Jackie, do we need to have number seven in there or not?
Well, we have somebody who has been nominated by, and it's not for the Arts Commission seat, and it's not for the Chapel Hill seat. It's just for a seat. But we need to wait. Okay, I'll wait. And the person can come to the meeting and give us his input anyway.
Or you can adopt the ordinance as it's
presented in front of you, and then we could come back with another ordinance that creates the Chapel Hill liaison.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
yes.
Great.
So that I include that in my motion as well.
Thank you.
All right, it's been moved.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, not passing unanimously.
So Kathy, would you be contacting the relevant advisory board chairs and the currently serving liaisons for the Greenways Commission to inform that those seats have been abolished?
Yes.
Okay. So yes.
Is that still effective in January? I'm sorry, I haven't done. Or is that effective immediately?
What's the question about?
Well, I think they have a meeting planned, right?
Immediately. Because there's no date.
The Greenways is
immediately. It's immediately.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a charge for Raymond Conrad, who's joining the Appearance Commission. Mr. Conrad, if you would come up and stand before the town clerk. I apologize. I forgot about you earlier on the agenda, so you've gotten more of a civics lesson than you counted on.
I was going to say, you sure you still want to do this?
Oh, okay. This is the charge for the Appearance Commission. As a member of the Appearance Commission, I will, 1, initiate, promote, and assist in the implementation of programs of general community beautification within the town's planning jurisdiction, 2, seek to coordinate the activities of individuals, agencies, organizations, and groups, public and private, whose plans, activities, and programs bear upon the appearance of the town and its environs, 3, direct the attention of the mayor and board of aldermen to ways in which the town government may take direct action affecting the appearance of the town and its environs. 4, make recommendations upon any permit or other item referred to the commission by the board of aldermen, planning board, board of adjustment, or administrator. Without limiting the generality of the foregoing, the commission's recommendations regarding development permit applications may address the appearance or design of proposed development projects. 5, appoint subcommittees consisting of commission members or advisory groups consisting of commission members, persons who are not non-commission members, or any combination thereof, to advise and assist the commission in carrying out its duties. 6, take any other action authorized by the Carborough Board of Aldermen. And he's already read and signed this, so you can meet the mayor.
Do I have to do anything tonight?
No, you don't. You did it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Appearance Commission.
Thanks very much.
Meet the mayor and board of aldermen.
Sure.
Dan?
Yeah, great.
Thank you.
Sammy?
Sorry for the wait.
Thank you for your service.
Welcome. Thank you.
All right, so that brings us to item D1, a public hearing on land use ordinance text amendment relating to the definition of affordable housing units. Mr. Manager.
Tina Moon from the Planning Department will make the staff presentation. She has recently rejoined the town, it's my understanding.
I thought she looked familiar. Hi.
Good evening. Again, I'm Tina Moon, recently with the Planning Department, and the purpose of this item is to provide an opportunity to receive public input on a requested amendment to the land use ordinance. The land use ordinance speaks to affordable housing in 3 areas. Section 15-54.1 outlines the town's affordable housing goal, which is to promote approximately 15% of affordable units. Section 15-182.4 provides a definition for affordable units and outlines options for residential density bonuses for providing units. And finally, Section 15-188 offers an option for constructing affordable housing units as a substitute for the size-limited housing requirement. Tonight's
discussion really focuses on this section 15-182.4, which is the definition of affordable housing, which is essentially a unit which is offered for sale or for rent at a price that doesn't exceed the affordable amount for a family earning up to 80% of the area median income. In January, Community House Trust staff submitted a request to modify the definition of affordable housing to assist in their sale of two of the affordable units in the Ballantyne subdivision. And they're looking at a time limit of hoping to sell those units in the end of May, or sorry, the end of March. So we're working on a little bit of an expedited schedule. And what they have requested here is the opportunity to sell two of these units at a slightly higher amount to families earning between 80 and 115% of that AMI. The proposed amendment, if approved, would modify two sections of the ordinance, both in this definition section of 15-182.4. That would be subsection B1 and B2. And this would allow Mr. Dowling is here, so I'll let him explain his reasonings in more detail. But in essence, it would allow the home trust to serve a broader buyer base. And because it would essentially capture another element, those people who make just slightly above 80 but in this area may still be having difficulty affording a market rate home. It would essentially allow a portion of the affordable housing units to be sold at this higher rate. The remaining affordable units would still be sold at the 80% rate. When we presented this to you in February as the request to set item, we had started listing these as just 100%, allowing these 20% of the affordable units to be sold at a rate of up to 100% of the AMI. Further discussions with Home Trust staff encouraged the town to go a little further, and this is actually what they had had in their application. And as I understand it, these higher amounts are the maximum that the home trust is allowed to do with their nonprofit status as an affordable home provider. During the planning board meeting, planning staff and members of the planning board voiced a little bit of concern over the need to really sit down and have a more comprehensive discussion of how our whole affordable housing program works and acknowledge that this proposed amendment may really be a little bit of a short-term fix. The procedure that you have before you tonight, the board must receive or provide an opportunity to receive public comments on a proposed ordinance amendment. The minor modification for the Ballantyne conditional use permit, something which during the request to set item we had proposed for these two items to be brought forth together, the Ballantyne subdivision is being delayed a little bit, so that should come to you later. And as always, the ordinance requires that the board adopt a statement describing consistency and explain why the action is reasonable and within the public interest. There are a number of areas in your policy documents that speak to affordable housing. And, in fact, the Vision 2020 document dedicates almost a whole section to the need for a variety of housing sizes and prices. These three provisions seem to be the most relevant for this particular item. 6.11, the policy should accommodate a variety of housing styles, sizes, and pricing. 6.17, the town should interact with nonprofits groups that work to provide affordable housing. And 6.18, a minimum of 15% of the residential units in any residential development should meet the affordable housing criteria. We referred the draft ordinance was referred to the Planning Board and to Orange County. The Planning Board comments are in your packet. The county's comments were set at your place. And staff is recommending, there's actually three recommendations for you tonight. One is that the board consider adopting the resolution finding consistency, which is attachment 1A. Two, to actually adopt the draft ordinance, which is attachment B. And finally, I don't think this is in your abstract, but to adopt the resolution, which is waiving the fees associated with the text amendment, which is included as attachment F, and that was what you just covered in your consent agenda. So that concludes the staff presentation. I'm happy to answer questions or turn the floor over to the public.
Why don't we hear from Robert Down?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
And welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm Robert Dowling, Executive Director of Community Home Trust, and I'd like to thank Tina and Trish for working with us on such a short timeline, and thank the mayor for helping us expedite this to get this rolling. The homes at Ballantyne are well under construction. They're framed up. They move quickly when they get going out there, and we would like to be able to sign contracts with people who earn above on two of these eight units. People who are above 80%, and that's what this proposed ordinance change does. As you all know, we require subsidy on these units. We require about $35,000 per unit on average for each unit. However, if we sell to people above 80%, we won't need subsidy. We can't use subsidy. We won't need subsidy. So we save ourselves probably $70,000 of that precious subsidy, which was slashed by 50% in the current budget here. So it'll be very helpful to us in spreading our subsidy out over fewer units, and it will also allow us to serve that income level that typically is not served, and you all may remember that you endorsed that change in our charter last year. We came to you and asked you to approve that change where 25% of our units could be sold to people above 80% with no more than 115%, and the board approved that sometime last year. So I'll ask you to approve that. At the same time, I want to mention that Trish and I are both aware that there's a flaw in what we're asking you to approve, and we talked about it today. We talked about it a couple weeks ago, and I think that we can live with the flaw until such time as the overall ordinance gets looked at, which I think we're hoping to do by the end of this fiscal year. The flaw is, and I think I had something to do with this flaw being in there, the ordinance talks about providing the affordable housing from the developer. And it's either 80% or it's 100% or 115%. It does not distinguish between what the developer provides it to us for and what we in turn can provide it to the home buyer for. And so that's why we had to change the 100 to 115, was because we can go up to 115. We're intending to sell to people at 100. But we need the flexibility to go up to 115 because what happens, I don't want to get too technical, but over time, because our income limits in this MSA are not increasing, the AMI tends to go up over time. So we start at 100. Hopefully we'll stay under 115. But we can't start at 115 because then we'll definitely go above 115, which we can't do, which puts us in a box. I know that's completely confusing to you all, but that's the flaw. And Trish and I think that we can live with that flaw. I think that's accurate. Until we look at the overall ordinance later in this fiscal year. So I'll stop there and answer any questions you all might have.
Okay, Lydia.
Thanks, Robert. And this may be too technical a question, but Tina mentioned and you mentioned this, cap of 115% as an affordable housing provider. That's, I guess, the highest you can go.
Yes.
Is that, I'm just curious, what's the legal authority for, is it a legal authority for that, or is it the type of tax-exempt status? Or
IRS.
Okay.
IRS has a revenue procedure which defines affordable housing and stipulates specifically a revenue procedure from 1996 that 115% is the maximum.
Okay. All right, thanks.
I have a somewhat related question, just wondering about the where the requirement is that you can't use the subsidy for higher than 80, I guess?
That comes with the subsidy. The federal, the home funds that we use in Carrboro come from the federal government, and they say you can't use that money for people above 80%. If Carrboro had local money, if you had local money, you could determine if that local money could be used to a higher income limit. At this point in time, I don't think the town has any local money, but we'll get to that later in this fiscal year, and maybe we'll generate some local money.
Great, thanks.
Exactly. Okay, great. Is there anybody else here who wanted to speak on this item?
Thank you.
I don't have anybody.
Thanks,
Robert.
Robert.
All right.
I move the public hearing be closed.
And Robert, thank Anita, because when she presented, she did an excellent job talking about she gave examples of really good numbers, so very understandable.
Thank you. All right, I think we don't actually. I guess we do need to close the public hearing, maybe.
Second.
I don't know. Then moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying
aye. Aye. It's closed regardless of whether it needs to be or not.
Exactly.
Move the resolution of consistency.
Second.
Then moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying
aye.
All those opposed.
Another passed.
Second.
All those, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously.
Thanks, Robert.
One more thing is approved.
We did.
We approved the resolution authorizing the fee waiver, but is it? This item has a.
There's a budget ordinance or something?
Where is it?
Is that attachment F?
There we go. There it is. Exactly.
Okay. So I'll move attachment F.
Second.
All right. Then moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Not passed unanimously. All right. I believe that brings us to item D2, request to set a public hearing on Claremont South, PUD rezoning, et cetera.
Can Trisha make the staff report on that one?
Just a few brief comments, really. And good evening, everyone. Sorry. The town is considering three applications at the present time. We're processing them, and they are a petition for a zoning map amendment to an R10 B3 planned unit development district, the application for a conditional use permit, and a petition for voluntary annexation of contiguous property. And these requests all pertain to the property that has been approved under a CUP issued previously as Claremont Phases 4 and 5.
This is not a modification, right? This is a new application.
It is a new application.
But
that's
it
correct.
Only affects two houses, right?
It affects the subdivision, the property that is the Claremont subdivision on the south side of the of Homestead Road.
Right.
And
so the... It's more
so
than
this is home. Claremont is on phases 1, 2, and 3 are up here. It affects these this property down here.
Yeah. They're not built on.
No, the subdivision has not been. Construction has not started on this portion of the development, but it is a new application because the part of the change of this in this part of the project is to change the housing type that's being provided there and to move into the meeting the size limited housing requirements.
Does this application vacate the previous approved permit or only if we approve this?
It doesn't vacate the previous approvals.
So that's in force until we approve this. And if we don't approve this, then the other permit still stands.
Yes,
okay. For this portion of the property. Yeah. And, of course, the piece on the north side is developed.
Right.
And we had received information a while ago about this potentially coming before us. Right? Am I correct?
You did. You had there was a meeting, an affordable housing review meeting, discussion of the proposed changes to the development. Mm-hmm. That was held already. That information was shared with you. So there are these two petitions for you. They all involve public hearings. And the we provided some information. The staff's recommended a public hearing be set for May 22nd. The petitioner's applicant are interested in an earlier date, and the April 24th public hearing would be a possibility, although except for the fact that that's a meeting that's being held at Owasso, and so not part of your typical broadcast or videotaped public hearing. And it has been the practice for many years for public hearings to be broadcast and to be video recorded. Mr. Zinn, Omar is here to perhaps offer some comments on his interests. We did, at the request of Alderman Coleman, provide the Zins with information on the cost of videotaping, the cost that the board has considered in moving the meetings as a result of the early voting taking place here at Town Hall. So we do have a recommendation, rather a resolution in your packet that would set a hearing for May 20. Well, it has a date that you could fill in. The staff, as I said, recommends May 22nd. That would be the normal public hearing date and would be the most straightforward for us. There are some issues, and I'm happy to go into details about some of the issues with an earlier date in April in terms of advisory board review and other scheduling things. But just leave that for the moment.
Jackie and then Mr. Zinn.
We're not I'd like to see us schedule this as soon as we can. And the reason is that it's been a while since anything's been built around here. And there are people waiting for work. Not just Mr. Zinn. There are subcontractors and carpenters and plumbers and electricians who haven't worked in a while. And to have a project that could be offering people work, to hold that up for a month or more because we're doing the right thing and having early voting, that has real consequences to people other than Omar. It has consequences to the people that he's hiring. And people have been, particularly in that industry, believe me, I know, people have been low on work. I'd like to clarify that my family has nothing to do with this, but I'm speaking of other people in the industry who I know. And we might think just a month or 6 weeks, but a month or 6 weeks when you're waiting to be able to start working is a long time. And I think the more we have that gets started, the more message it sends out that people are building again in Carrboro and people are working again in Carrboro, and that's good stuff. So
are you proposing we do it in April?
I'd like to do it as soon as we can. I know we have to do the 30-day notice to the planning board. I don't think everybody anymore, not everybody has school-age kids. I really can't see. If we went around everybody's breaks, we could never have meetings between the university and the public schools, you know? I can't see taking a hiatus every time one of them has a break. So I'd like to see it as soon as it's possible.
Michelle and then Lydia.
One of the reasons, though, that April 10th is in question is because we wouldn't have the advisory board's comments.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, April is problematic because there is a town holiday the day after the scheduled joint review meeting. We have polled the planning board, and they are available for that meeting on that night. We have polled the other boards, but we don't have responses back. We've also checked with the planning board about and the other boards about their availability for a mid-month joint review meeting, trying to move the schedule as close as possible into May, if that were to be a decision. But we don't have responses from all the advisory board members right now. And I think that Mr. Zinn can speak to this in terms of what schedule they think they are on in terms of ready to begin construction. They don't have construction plan approval yet for the project, so there is another step.
Down.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm
totally
not wrong
agree.
In and saying that this slows it down.
No, we certainly recognize that and agree that we want to move things as quickly as possible.
Trish, so, are those timing questions solved if we did it on May 1st rather than April 24th?
Well, I think May, if other advisory board members are available, you know, either for the joint review in the earlier one in April or the mid-month, then there wouldn't be that turnaround issue, which results from looking at April 10th. I mean, the problem, you know, April 10th, we have the town hall's closed on the Friday. So we've sent the packets out for the hearing prior to the meeting actually being held. There are no recommendations in it, that sort of thing. And then subsequently, you know, you have the CBS
public hearing. I'm sorry. What does April 10th have
well,
to
Well, April 10th was a suggested date that
I thought we were looking at April 24th. That would be our normal public hearing.
Well, that's certainly a consideration. And again, the issue there is the fact that it's not being there's not broadcasting and recording going on.
Could we tape it?
Lydia, and then...
Okay, so April 24th, I know that's the one that Dan kind of said, are they willing to pay to and then we'll hear from him in a minute. But my question, too, was about April 24th, if we had checked with Chapel Hill Town Council Chambers. It's not free.
It's not available.
All right, and then just a final thought, that if we still were juggling around with all these dates, I know that it's only a week earlier, but May 15th is when our... the public hearing is on the budget, and typically that's not really a long hearing. So, I mean, that would be a week earlier than maybe what we're looking at as a possibility of scheduling it. So,
and if that meant that, I mean, joint review could actually be held in April or May for a May 15th public hearing, because May 3rd is the first Thursday in May. You know, there's obviously a week at least between the preparation of the agenda packet for the hearing and that meeting. So that's not difficult to meet, preparing summary recommendations and so forth.
May 15th.
Okay. Omar, would you do you dare to
wade in? Wade in.
Wade into this morale.
Too much.
So thanks for welcoming me up here and listening to me again. Just real quick, backing up, I'll try not to speak too long. In October of 2010, I came before you and to take your temperature about this modification. We would have gone forward with a modification instead of a rezoning with a new CUP, but in order to accomplish the commercial zone, we had to ultimately create a PUD and a rezoning, which requires annexation. So there we are with the new CUP. We it's been 15 or 16 months, and you know we're excited to move forward, and I don't blame that on the town of Carrboro. I mean, there have been some delays on our side as well. It's just a lengthy process. We hope to come before you guys in March. The whole CVS thing got pushed to March. It's a controversial project, and it's ahead of us. So, you know, it's going to require a lot of time and attention. So then the next available date was, we were told, was in April. And then, It was realized that the April date is not videotaped, and in addition, the joint planning meeting of April 6th is a date that I was personally trying to move because that's Chapel Hill Carrboro City School spring break, so my family was planning to drive down to Florida, and we're still planning on doing that, but I wanted to try and move that meeting, ahead or back. But so we were told recently, within the last week or two, that the April 24th meeting wouldn't work because we didn't have videotaping capabilities. So, and again, I'm willing to, come back on the Thursday in April 5th, I believe it is, to, come back to be here for the joint meeting if that's what I have to do. I mean, it's whatever I have to do, that's what I got to do. So, I then asked Trish, I said, how was this decision made? We've got early voting, and now we've got, meeting at OWASA. And I said, does this meeting have to be videotaped? I mean, I know I'm one of several people who watch you guys when it's my turn to come up here and speak. So I know when to get here. But I said, Trish, can we have audio feed? Can people just listen to audio feed? She said, traditionally we've had the video and the audio for the residents. So if, you know, maybe if they want to drive up here to Carrboro as well, that's what, that's they're aware of what's happening, and they can do that, or at least they're aware of what's happening with the meeting. I said, well, can we videotape it and then play it back? And so we've gone through all these issues, and most recently she asked Alderman Coleman, you know, well, what are the possibilities for getting, you know, external video feed so that we can still get it over Channel 18, local channel, so everyone can watch it? And it was told to me today that it would be around $1,500. And so then I said to Trish, I sent an email to Trish asking Trish if, you know, is that $1,500 for the entire session, or can I just pay to videotape and feed my 45 minutes that I need? And, you know, we haven't necessarily looked into the answer to that. And, you know, I'm sure people charge a certain amount of money just to show up. And it might not be $1,500, but hopefully it would be less if I'm the only person that they need to videotape that night. So that's just where my head's at. That's a little bit of history of where we're coming from. And, you know, we have not received construction plan approval. We can't move forward with construction plan approval until we get the CUP approved. But we haven't modified any of our streets. All of our drainage is all the same. And, you know, we tried to keep everything pretty much the same, with the exception of the lot lines in this modification of the plan to keep things moving. So I anticipate that our construction plan approval will happen quickly once our CUP is approved. And we're trying to handle a lot of the things with OWASA and other, you know, groups, so that we can be ready, you know, hopefully if and when we do receive CUP approval. That's in a nutshell. You know, I wanted to see if you guys had any questions or comments for me.
Well, I mean, the thing that strikes me is that it seems like we have actually a really good notification list for people who were interested in this project before.
Yep.
So there's a lot of opportunity here, maybe uniquely so, to let those people know about when and where we're meeting, mm-hmm. and just have it on April 24th over at OWASA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, you know how we do on these things. If it's non-controversial, we'll probably make a decision that night. If there's a lot of controversy, we'll probably need a little more time to think about it. So if there's a lot of controversy, and it's not being held underneath the video cameras because we're at OWASA, then, you know, all the more reason that we might delay taking a vote on it until a later time. But otherwise, it doesn't seem like, I mean, I don't think we should be paralyzed every year by early voting.
Exactly. Let's do an audio tape, and send out notification. And you've already had meetings with neighbors. It's,
Sim, what were you going to say?
What's the orange human, where we have the joint meeting?
The Southern Human Services Center.
Does that have video capacity?
I don't think it does. It does
have some capabilities. But it still costs something,
yeah,
too, though.
It has a little more capability than OWASA, but it's not ready like Chapel Hill, mm-hmm. than we are. So it would be the same thing.
It costs money.
No cable casting, no streaming. Mm-hmm. It would be after the fact. Okay.
Right. I will tell you that we have met with the Wexford homeowners. And they prefer this plan. I think I can speak for all of them, saying that they prefer this new plan of single-family houses backing up to Wexford. That was all the feedback that we got.
Okay.
So what would be audio taping it live, or would that just be taped for later then?
I don't know whether it's streamed right away or what.
It's for later.
The audio is for later, too.
And I really support that because I really don't want the early voting for anyone to think it impedes our process, number one. And number two, you know, back in the day, you know, we didn't even have audio for public hearings here. You were either here or you missed it. And, I really think that, you know, having the audio or the streaming feed that can come in at a later point would be absolutely fine.
When I first started, we had people with clay tablets sitting with like little stylus at the questions.
Cuneiform.
Yeah. That was one of Mike's jobs. Yeah, he was. That's right. That's funny.
The chisel.
You know, there'll probably be a blank screen. We could, I don't know what normally goes up when we're in session, but not able to video. If we could make sure that told the public where we are and what the agenda item is that we're
doing. Or that considering. The audio feed will come later. Good point.
That's good. All those kind of details. All right, very good. Okay, so I'll take that as a motion from Sammy.
Second.
And seconded by Dan that we schedule
the resolution. saying April 24th.
April 24th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, I'll pass unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Omar.
Thanks, Omar. Sorry to disrupt your trip.
Is there anything further from members of the board?
No.
Okay. Staff? No. Okay. Is there a motion that we adjourn?
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
I have to do that.